There it is. That moment of silence. Here we are back again. I think I'm back on track. Sometimes I run off the rails here, and it's just tired. I'm getting older. I'll be 79 in July. And yeah, that was good. Yeah. I don't know what the applause is for, but if you don't drink and you don't die, this is where you get to be one day, you know. So, but I take pretty good care of myself and stay active. We were just talking a few minutes ago. I go to 5 meetings a week, and I have done that for ever since I retired because I love to go to meetings. That's where you are. That's where, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there was something so special about this place. I didn't know exactly what it was, but I came into this, one of those long shot buildings, you know, and I was sitting in the pews on the side of the meeting, and I had my dark sunglasses on at night, and so you couldn't see my eyes, you know. I think the longest... trip I ever took was from a seated position to a standing position saying I was an alcoholic, you know. And I didn't know exactly what you people had, but it was all over you. It was in your clothing. It was in your, you smelled right, you looked right. It was in your eyes. There was a certain sparkle or whatever. And whatever it was that you had so much of it that it spilled all over me. And I felt safe for the first time that I could remember in a long, long, long time. So there's a power here. There's a presence here. It was in that room when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I could feel it. I could sense it. And we can all sense it. When we come here, we plug into it. Whether you want to come or not, doesn't matter. Whether you like the meeting or not, doesn't matter. You just go plant your butt down in a meeting someplace, and you plug into a power, because you see, it gets multiplied by the number of people in the room, you know, because we all have it. We all have this power, whether you know it or not, or are aware of it or not. So anyway, it's in these rooms. And anyway, I'm going to get back to finish up with Arizona here, over here, where we went totally bankrupt and had to get out of town one more time. And we wound up with $14,000 left. We put all of our money into that house that we were renovating. We did a number on it. We bought the best, the most expensive appliances and everything. You know, we changed the center of balance in that house. I added on 300 square feet to it, you know, with this field stone and stuff. It was fabulous. But we woke up one morning. Pat calls me from something she read in the newspaper. It said 20 FRDRs, $10 a piece. You know, well, that's French doors, right? So she goes over and she says, I think I should buy these. They're like 10 feet tall, and the glass is rolled glass, and the brass was 18 karat brass. And I said, get them. So anyway, we had put the best of everything in that house. And by the time we sold it, it was in the 80s when the market went crazy, and interest rates went up to as high as 22%, and you couldn't get out of anything, and we were stuck in it, all that cash and everything. And by the time we did manage to sell that house at like 20% interest, I think the woman paid for it at that particular time, we were flat-ass broke. We had $14,000 left over from all that money. We went to Arizona with a lot of money, and it took us 4 years to go broke. You know, one more smart thought. It's like my friend Shirley that I was telling you about earlier. She says, one more smart thought and I'd have died drunk. And, you know, anyway, we had $14,000 left over when we got out of that real estate fiasco, and that just paid all of our bills, so then we were broke. I mean, flat broke. And we come back to California, and we had to rent. I never dreamed that I would ever own a house again in California. Again, I'm telling you, if you just stick to it, keep showing up, Do what's in front of you to do. Keep a job. You know, keep, you know, manage your money well, and do all, you know, you will get to a place again where you, where you can do more things than you ever dreamed that you could do. The sky is the limit here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really believe that. So anyway, we came back to California, and we wound up in renting over in Studio City. And then the day came when we could buy a little house. I think we paid like $180,000 for it, which was, it was way beyond us anyway, but we were able to get it for some way, for some reason. And we lived there, and we had been renovating houses for, well, we did it actually over 30 years all in all, and made a great deal of money doing that too, by the way, all over the place, Marina Del Rey and okay, places that we renovated, like Marina Del Rey, that little tiny place that we had down there on the sand in the peninsula, you know. I think I bought it for $350. I sold it for $850, and today it's worth $1.2 million. So, you know, all kinds of stories like that, and some of the places that we've redone, and places that well, people have bought from us. So, anyhow, I ran into, we were going to the meeting in Dickens. I don't know if you know where that is. It's over in Friday night, Dickens meeting in Studio City, is that, Sam? Sherman Oaks, yeah, right. It's down the foot from where we live. And I was, there was a speaker there that night named Donald Madden. I don't know if anybody in this room knows Donald Madden, but Donald Madden was one of the zaniest, wildest characters, most flamboyant people you'd ever want to meet in your life. I mean, he was so crazy. And when he was talking, Pat jabbed me in the ribs and said, "You have got to get his card. He's telling your story, you know." I mean, he was so nuts. He would... they locked him up regularly in Camarillo State Hospital all the time. And then he would be in there for an indefinite period of time, and they would bring in the typewriter. And he was writing a column in for 56 newspapers across the country, in the Nut House, mind you, entitled A Talent for Living. So, I mean, you know... So I got his card, and I gave him mine, and he didn't call me. So I called him up on a Sunday, and I said, "You know, I know what you did. You stuck my card in a book, or put it in a filing cabinet, or something. But I need to come and see you." So, you know, I told you earlier, I'd been without a sponsor for like 14 years. Out there all by myself, and because I had heard my first sponsor say, "You'll only have one sponsor all your life, and that's the one you go through the steps with." And I thought I had gone through the steps with Dan McCafferty, you know, so I never replaced my sponsor all of those years. This is how you hear things when you're new, you know, and I don't advise anyone to do that because I was out there all alone. And I sat down with Donald Madden that Sunday morning, you know, across the table from him, and we were talking, and mid-sentence, I just broke down in tears and started to cry, because I realized when I was talking to Donald that all of those years I had been so lonely, so lonesome, and it was so unnecessary, because there's so many people in Alcoholics Anonymous who are willing to stand on top with you or sponsor you or whatever. You don't have to do this alone. It's nearly impossible to do alone. It's such a hard task, you know. So anyway, you don't have to do it by yourself. And we'll go into that in detail this weekend. So Donald and I became great friends. And oh God, he loved to work with me. And I'm a designer as well. So I'm very creative. And he used to love my work. And we would work on some of the most expensive property in our area, in Beverly Hills, and out in the valley, all kinds of beautiful, fabulous homes and stuff. And I remember we were doing John Convoy's apartment over on Crescent Heights in L.A. And he was on the top floor there. He had the whole top floor. And we had these like 8-foot Chinese white pots, and I was to fill them up with dried flowers and weeds and stuff, you know. And so it was my first job with Donald, and I wanted him to really, really love my work. So I placed everything in there. It was like perfect, you know. Da-da. And then he comes by, and he didn't even stop. He just says, oh, no, do it alcoholically. So I knew exactly what he meant. I pulled all that stuff out of there, and I started just throwing it in, you know, and just kind of like designing this picture as I went in my head. And then he comes back by, still didn't stop. He said, that's it. So we were great friends, you know, up until the day he died, and it broke all of our hearts. We've lost an awfully lot of good people along the way. So after Donald died, I had Howard was my sponsor for a while, and then Howard moved away. And Howard has 11 days more than me, and he never lets me forget it. And, you know, Howard, in fact, Howard came out to the desert to speak at a meeting on Sunday, one of our spiritual meetings, and I happened to be leading that meeting that day for him. And so when he got up to talk, he said, I'm really glad that Luther's here today. He said, you know, because he said, I feel so bad for him. He said, when I got sober, which was on like the 4th of August, you know, he said, this huge wave of spirituality just went through the entire country and it just hit us all flat, you know. And, you know, it stopped on the 14th. See, my birthday is the 15th, right? So I said, for your information, Howard, I was caught in the undertow. So we have a lot of fun together, he and I. And first sponsor died, second sponsor died, third sponsor moved away, and I happened to be at a meeting in the Pacific Group on, it was a memorial service for a friend of ours, Chuck Nisbet died. And you know how Pacific Group is, people all over the place, breaking down the chairs and putting stuff away and all of that. And I literally bumped into Clint Hodges, you know. And as only he could say it, he said, how can I help you? And believe me when I tell you that was the last thing on my mind that day was asking anyone to be my sponsor. But I said, you could be my sponsor, you know. And so he gave me his card, and he said, give me a call. So I gave him a call, and we agreed that I would, that he would take me on. And I'm not going to talk forever here because it's so Friday night and we're all tired. We're going to start out tomorrow on a journey, and the journey that I was taken on. And I don't want you to miss it at all because it's a fascinating journey. But Clint said to me, that night, 3 weeks later, he said to me, Luther, I wonder, you're going to like this, Sarat. 3 weeks later, he said, I wonder if you would be willing to do something with me. Now, you don't have to, because I consider you my gift from the universe. I was losing Chuck, and I got you that day. So I'm going to be your sponsor, whether you do it or not. But I wonder if you'd be interested in doing this with me. And I said, what is it? And he said, I wonder if you'd be interested in going through this process with me. And I tell you, my head blew off. I just thought, what? And I said, I'll have to get back to you. I mean, come on, I was almost 25 years sober, you know. So I drove away mad, and I, about halfway home in the marina then, and I said, wait a minute here, Luther Wood, what is this? You said if you ask anybody to be your sponsor, you would do whatever they said without question. What is this? So I called him up when I got home and I said, Clint, I need to meet with you. And he said, you meet me at Jerry's Deli at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning and bring your book with you, you know. So I said, okay. So I met him at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, And I said, Clint, I agree to do what you ask me to do. But I just want to know, why would you ask me to do it? And he said, for two reasons. Number one, I don't think you're having enough fun. And he said, secondly, there's a loneliness about you that I cannot bear. He had tears in his eyes when he said it, you know. And I knew that he saw straight through to my soul, because only I knew about the loneliness. You know, I was doing everything in the world to cover it up, I guess. You know, staying busy, really, really busy. I sponsored 28 people, going on and on and on and on and on and on. You know, but I couldn't disguise it. I couldn't disguise that. He saw straight through it, you know. So then he asked me, picked up page 50 and 52, you know. He says, I want you to read this part here on page 52. And they're called the bedevilments. And so I read these bedevilments, and he said, do any of them apply to you right now? And I said, well, just about all of them do, you know. And he says, now we know what the problem is, don't we? And he said, this is a test for untreated alcoholism. That's why I ask you if you would go through this process with me, you know, because this is what we need to do. So I committed myself to go with him on that journey. And he said to me, the strangest thing, he said, you and I are going on a journey, and neither one of us is coming back. God damn, I love that. I just loved it, you know, very dramatic. And but you know what? I know exactly what he meant today. I know precisely what he meant. We're like, Chuck C. used to talk about us being infinite children on an infinite journey. And that's what this is all about. There's no ending to this. We're on this journey. There is no end. We're just in the journey and on the journey, you know. So tomorrow I'm going to take you to start you out on this journey with me and give you a little bit of a feeling of what it was like, at least was for me. And I promise to be more collected and more together. It's been... You know, I am getting older, and I feel it, you know, and it just aggravates me, because I don't like it. You know, my brain says one thing, and my body says it's time to nap. So, which is something I never did. They used to try to get me to nap when I was a child, and you know, Donald Madden, by the way, told me, when I told him this story, he says, Luther, every time you talk, you have got to tell this story. They need to know who they're dealing with here, you know. And I think I was about 5 years old. I lived with my grandmother and grandfather when I was until I was 6 years old, which I kind of had a resentment for my mother, you know, that she abandoned me and left me there. What my mother did is she was 16 years old in a cotton mill town, you know. No education, no nothing, and no way of raising a child, and put me in probably the safest place on the planet with my grandmother and my grandfather. And so where was I going with that one? Yeah, 5 years old. So, but what was I saying about 5 years old? Oh, napping, yeah. They tried to get me to nap, and I wouldn't nap. I just couldn't nap, but I can nap today, and at the drop of a hat, and that's not where I was going, but God damn it if I can remember where I was going. You know what, and it's okay. Oh, God. I had such great anticipation of this weekend, and maybe that's part of it, too. I've been, I could hear Clint's voice saying to me, do not prepare. Do not prepare for this weekend, you know. So so I haven't done that. And anyway, I'm going to cut it off for tonight, and we'll start this journey tomorrow, all of us. And I hope each of you will find a special place in it for you. It only takes one little moment in time one little flicker, one little flare of something to ignite something in you. And I believe that's all of our purpose here from now on, is to ignite something in another human being, to pull each other along, because we're all we have. Trust me when I tell you that, we're all we have. You know. So anyway, I'll see you all tomorrow. There's a 7 a.m. Meditation, is that correct? Yep, here in this room. And dinner, breakfast is at 8. So anyway, thank you so much.